So welcome back. Where was I last week? I was gone. Couldn't make it. No, I wasn't gone. My wife was out of town. She's working on a video. It's called Women of Bhakti, and she was interviewing two devotees who are both professors, one at Princeton, I think both professors at Princeton, on the tradition of bhakti, the female tradition of bhakti. And I was with my daughter, 10 years old, and we couldn't come. So here we are again. We're talking about sadhana. And as you may remember, sadhana means practice. And sadhya means perfection, or as we say, practice makes perfect. So, what I want to talk about today is a little bit more of what we've been speaking about, association, but not only association with people, but association with environments in general and how we're affected by that, and how being Krishna conscious means, at least in one aspect, it means keeping ourselves within environments which uplift us, which inspire us, which do not pull us down into the modes of nature. So many of you know about the modes of nature. Maybe you all know about the modes of nature. And the way Krishna describes the modes of nature, he describes them as forces which pull us in particular ways according to their influences. So if we allow ourselves to be influenced by passion, then we become very passionate. And one of the ways Krishna describes that is that we're never satisfied. We always want more. Whatever we get, it's not enough. Or intensive desire to achieve anything, sexual desire, strong sexual desire, that's considered passion. And ignorance is basically madness, laziness, inertia, dreaming about doing something, never doing it. Just feeling like I don't want to do anything, or maybe depressed or lamenting. And goodness is what Prabhupada describes as more of the nature of knowledge, illumination, the next door neighbor to the spiritual nature, or right on the edge of the spiritual nature, realizing I'm not the body, eating vegetarian food, and so forth. So each of these modes is influencing us. And if we understand how the modes of nature work, and we understand also how the spiritual nature works, then we begin to realize that the, I don't want to say trick, but for lack of a better word, the trick of being Krishna conscious is to be in environments as far as possible, to be around people and environments that are uplifting. So we had spoken earlier about the five main practices of bhakti, and we mentioned that in our temples, every morning, those five practices are going on. There's hearing, there's chanting, there's associating, there's being in the holy place, residing in the holy place, and there's worship of the deity. These are the five main activities. So Prabhupada instituted those five activities within our morning program. So it creates an environment which gets us out of the modes of nature. At one time, Prabhupada said, if you're sitting in a Srimad Bhagavatam class and you're hearing the Bhagavatam, while you're there hearing, you're in the mode of goodness. Just by hearing, just by lending your ears to the message of the Bhagavatam, by listening to the speaker, you're automatically transported to goodness just by hearing. It's that simple. So when we're chanting the holy name, then we're surrounded by the internal energy. We're praying to Radharani, who is the personification of the internal energy, the spiritual energy. So chanting the holy name is meant to put us under the care and protection of Radharani, under the care and protection of the internal energy. And the internal energy brings us to Krishna. And the external energy pushes us, or we should say pulls us, or as Shastra says, throws us. Throws us and covers us. Throws us away from Krishna and covers us. That's the job of the material energy, and that's the power of the material energy. And I'm sure all of you have felt that. When you associate with devotees, you feel uplifted. You can feel like this dense fog of the modes of nature subsiding. It's kind of like the sun is rising and the fog is dissipating. And you can feel influences that may have been affecting you before you came to the temple or before you were associating with devotees just kind of dissipate. That influence just dissipate. It's kind of like when you're healthy and you're eating properly, then the foods you eat give you energy. But when you're not eating properly or you're not exercising, then you feel lethargic. You always feel it's difficult to do something. So your activities are causing a reaction, and then you're living out the reaction. So in the same way, spiritual activities cause a reaction, which energizes us, enthuses us, uplifts us, clears our consciousness, reduces our material attachments and material desires, clarifies our vision. Whereas influence of the material modes of nature basically do the opposite. So really, if you look at sadhana, you see that sadhana is meant to keep us within a proper environment, or keep us within the influences that will properly cultivate our Krishna consciousness. So, but now I want to present another angle of vision, because we have to clarify what this means, because we're not always in ideal environments. A lot of times we're in environments which are antagonistic to Krishna consciousness. And therefore, you could say, when I'm not in an environment which is conducive to Krishna consciousness, I can't be Krishna conscious, because the environment is degrading me. And that there is some truth to that, but there is some falsity there. And recently in a BTG, I think it was perhaps March or January, February, or the March issue, depending on what country you live in, I wrote an article about turning your workplace into Vaikuntha. And I was addressing the idea of environment, giving into the environment, as opposed to transforming the environment. So it is true, on one hand, the environment has a very powerful effect on us. And it is true, on the other hand, that we can transform our environment. So how do we transform our environment? Well, one of the best ways we can do that is if our home environment is uplifting and inspiring, then when we go into environments which are not quote-unquote conducive to Krishna consciousness, we tend to remain a bit aloof or transcendental, or at least in the mode of goodness, and not affected by it. It's not like if you go into a bar, which Prabhupada said is in the mode of ignorance, you immediately will get drawn into the mode of ignorance. And then you say, well, I ended up in a bar by accident, and then I had to drink. I couldn't help myself. No, nobody would accept that. But if you hang around a bar day after day after day, yeah, then it makes sense that you become influenced by the environment. So similarly, if every morning we're imbibing Krishna consciousness in a very powerful way, then when we go out into, quote-unquote, the environments which are not conducive, we tend to remain above those influences. But, and here's the but, and the big but, is if we don't do that, then we'll tend to be influenced by those environments. And then we will feel like, I can't do anything because of the environment, because the environment is not conducive. One of the things that I've found very, very helpful for me is to have an iPod or some kind of MP3 player, portable, with earphones. So a lot of times I'll be out in the world, out and about, I'll be shopping or this or that, where I don't have to interact with people, and I'll just be listening to Krishna conscious lectures, or I'll be listening to kirtan. So when I do that, I always feel like I'm not really in the store. My consciousness is not in the store, or my consciousness is not where I am, but my consciousness is hearing about Krishna, so I'm transcending it. So I'm sure that's an experience we've all had, where we can go into an environment which is very hostile, but we can remain Krishna conscious either by hearing, by chanting, or by having a very powerful morning program, whether it's in the temple or whether it's by ourselves. Now, I wanted to relate something which I realized, especially through japa, but also anything you do in the morning, through, be it puja or reading or whatever it is, your time in the morning, before you go out in the world, before you have to face your day and do what you have to do, just imagine what it would be like if every morning you could transport yourself to the spiritual world and spend an hour or two or three or four or five. And then come back, so let's say 4 o'clock in the morning, you went to the spiritual world, you went to Goloka, you went to Braj for 2, 3, 4, or 5 hours, and there you were, engaged with Krishna in Leela, or hearing from Krishna, or hearing from, or associating with the other devotees. And then you came back and you went to work. And you did that every day. Do you think the environment at your work would have a negative effect on you? I doubt it. Because you would be living with that experience, and that experience is so superior to anything you could experience here that it just wouldn't affect you. It's like when you have something really good, nothing inferior can affect you or attract you. If your immune system is strong, you won't get affected by diseases. So it's like that. It's like a spiritual immune system. Prabhupada described the modes of nature as infections. And you can really feel that sometimes when you go into a very passionate situation and you haven't been practicing, you haven't had good sadhana for a while. You can feel like your transcendental or your spiritual immune system is down, and then you become affected by the flu of passion or the flu of ignorance. Whereas if your transcendental immune system is strong, then when you enter those passionate or ignorant situations, you don't feel much affected by it, if affected at all. So that's the real key. And that's what sadhana does. It's meant to keep us in a purified state. It's meant to at least situate us in goodness. And so many times Prabhupada said, we, as far as possible, should be situated in goodness. So what does that mean, to be situated in goodness? Now you might think, well, isn't Krishna consciousness transcendental, and shouldn't we strive for the transcendental? Yes, we should strive for the transcendental. And much of what we do is transcendental, but we may not always be transcendental. But a life in goodness, what does that mean? It means regulation, it means simplicity, it means cleanliness. It means satisfaction with whatever we have. There's certain elements of goodness which are very important for our spiritual practice. And then when we get more and more into passion, then the mind becomes more scattered, more disturbed, and we become more affected by what's going on around us in this world. And part of that effect, being affected, is the conditioning which is within our heart. It's not that it's just in the environment, but the environment is interacting with what's in our heart. And that's where it becomes dangerous, because there's so much in this world that is attractive to us as conditioned souls. And so when we come in contact with those things which are attractive to us, that's when we have the trouble. It's just like when your immune system is weak, then easily you become ill. So when our Krishna conscious immune system is weak, and then we're in an environment which resonates with our conditioning, then what happens? Then there's a connection there, and then that conditioning is activated. And then now we're in what we could call, how should we call it, what mode? It's the difference between being preventive medicine and then being sick and curing a disease. And now you're in reactionary mode where you're diseased, and now you have to work on curing yourself as opposed to preventing the disease. So many times we fall into Maya. So when we fall into Maya, we have to pick ourselves up, we have to get out. But it's much harder to get out of Maya. It's easier to stay out than get out, because once you're in, you're down, the modes are pounding you. Whereas if you stay a little bit above the modes, if you can stay within the modes of goodness, it's much easier to practice Krishna consciousness in that way. So that is why Prabhupada stressed regulation. You do it every day. Now, you know, we might think, every day, 365 days a year, every day, I have to do this. This is the instruction. Chant 16 rounds every day. Hear Bhagavatam every day. Associate with devotees every day. Do these things every day. Worship the deities every day. Well, the point is, every day you don't do that, or at least don't do at least one of them, what happens? It's a day that you're more susceptible to the disease of the modes of nature, because your transcendental immune system is weakened. And if you go for long periods of time like that, then what happens? Then your immune system is totally weak. And then what often happens in situations like that, then a devotee thinks, well, what's the use? My immune system is so weak, I can't fight off these infections. But the reality is, you need to do preventive medicine. No, you can't fight off the infection, but you can transcend it through prevention. So that's why there's regulation. It's like anything that you do, you can always fall from it. You can be healthy, and the next day, if you don't take care of yourself, you can be sick. You may have taken care of yourself for a year or 5 or 10 years. And then if you fail to take care of yourself for a few days, you could become ill. Or it's something that you do every day, that you practice, you're really good at. But if you fail to practice for a while, then what happens? You lose your touch, you lose the skill. So it's the same thing in Krishna consciousness. It's not that, particularly in the stage of sadhana, that we think, well, I'm building up momentum, so I've done this for so long, so I can slack and it'll be okay. It's true, we have momentum from doing it for so long, but you can't slack that long. A bad day here and there is one thing, but successive bad days over a period of time. And then our conditioning starts to take over. And that conditioning manifests through the mind, and the mind starts talking to us in terms of our conditioning. Oh, you want this, you need this. And so many bad qualities may start to surface because they're born of passion and ignorance. And then now we have to battle with those. So sadhana is a practice which keeps us in a healthy condition, keeps our immune system strong, and we need to do it every day. That's what practice means, and that's how Prabhupada taught it. And Bhagavatam teaches, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, hear it every day. And we were talking about this a few weeks ago. Why every day? Because when you're conditioned to have done something for so long, for so many lifetimes, do you think within a few years you can correct it? Just do it a few times and it will correct itself? No. We're overcoming conditioning of the same kind of thinking and the same kinds of attitudes. Not just look at this lifetime. I would speak of thousands of lifetimes. Just look at this type of lifetime and look at how your mind works. And you'll notice your mind works every day in the same way. Do you worry about things? You tend to worry about the same thing? You tend to have the same thought, the same worry pattern? It's like a mantra. What about this? What about that? I hope this works out. What about this? So the mind tends to work that way. We're so much creatures of habit that they say that when you take a bath, you soap up the same way every day. Maybe you start with this arm, and then your stomach. They say men, when they shave the same way every day. Start here, then they go, however you do it, just notice it tomorrow. And they say, when you put your socks on, if you wear socks, when you put your socks on, whatever foot you put on the sock on first, you do that every day. It's just we're such creatures of habit. So we've got this habit of conditioned thinking in this life. And you can see it. Just notice how your mind works. Notice what your concerns are. The same things tend to bother us. The same worries tend to worry us every day. Same concerns tend to concern us every day. The same things that make us feel happy or satisfied tend to be the same every day. So now we're trying to undo conditioning, not only in this lifetime, but in so many lifetimes. So when we understand that, then we understand practice, 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 practice. Sadhana means practice, practice. Now if you read Prabhupada's letters, especially in the early days of the movement, he reiterated the same thing over and over and over again. And why did he do that? Because we have a tendency to think, well, I've practiced it long enough, I'm good at it, so why practice it anymore? Just like maybe you learn an instrument, and you become proficient at it. And at a certain point, you could think, okay, I'm good enough. And I don't have to practice that much anymore. But Krishna consciousness is not like that. Of course, as you advance, it becomes natural. But the reason Krishna consciousness is different than many other things is because as you practice, 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 there's a taste. And so no longer it becomes a chore or a kind of practice. But at a certain point, it's just you want to do it more and more and more. But the point is that although that's natural, it's not going to come easily because we're undoing conditioning patterns that are very strongly rooted within our hearts. So Prabhupada, again and again and again, chant 16 rounds, follow the four regulative principles, rise early, attend classes or read, worship the deity, associate with devotees, only take Krishna prasadam. It's like fencing in our creeper. And this example is given that bhakti is the seed, and the seed is in the heart, and it's growing, and the seed is very tender, and it needs to be fenced in. So the material world, we could say the material energy is like dangerous animals or dangerous insects that could kill or eat us alive, eat the creeper alive. So we fence in the creeper. So these practices protect us. They create a proper environment to inspire us, and they protect us from the negative environments. Now, the reason I'm talking about this is an experience that I've had, particularly being in India recently. I had this very vivid experience that when I teach Krishna consciousness, when I do it a lot, I become very inspired by it. And it creates an environment within me, within my own heart, where I feel the necessity to practice what I'm teaching. And I also feel the necessity, because other people who I'm teaching expect me to model what I'm teaching. And then often I counsel people. And similarly, when I counsel, people would expect that what I'm counseling them, I'm also doing. So they have expectations of me. And because of their expectations of me and my own internal expectations, it creates a very powerful force for inspiring me in my Krishna consciousness, inspire me to live to a certain ideal and a certain standard. So that's just one example of an environment. An environment that I'm in that inspires me and it automatically uplifts me. It's very powerful. When people expect something of you, it creates a very powerful force to uplift you. I just heard someone say that your friends, you should have friends that hold you to high standards. So that's what association is. That's the real power of association, that you have friends that hold you to high standards. And you know, whoever you associate with, the standards that they set will influence you, be they good standards or be they bad standards, high standards or low standards, they'll influence you. So the people you associate with, if they have higher standards, that will affect you. And if you can, in your friendship with them or in your association with them, ask them to hold you to higher standards, that will create an environment that will inspire you. And that's just one example of how environment molds us. And I was feeling, when I was in India, I was almost feeling like who I am is so much dependent on the environment and the energy that's surrounding me. So I was living in Mayapur. Mayapur is a holy dham. So when you live in a holy dham, that energy just, it's almost like right off the ground, you're just being uplifted and you're always residing a little bit above the modes of nature. That's the influence of the dham. But the interesting thing about the dham is, although that's the influence of the dham, everybody is being influenced in the same way. So everyone is very serious about practicing Krishna consciousness. There are like 700, 800 devotees at Mangalarti. Most of the community, if not all, are there at Mangalarti. It's a very powerful environment. So everyone's feeling inspired, which therefore inspires everyone more. And so in that environment, naturally you become inspired. So what a great place to be, to become inspired in Krishna consciousness. And sometimes there are environments like that where you can't duplicate them, where if you want to become inspired in a particular way, those environments are essential. And just last weekend, there was the Festival of Inspiration in New Vrindavan. It's the same idea. Devotees come together, create a proper environment to inspire one another. Just by seeing devotees, by seeing the kirtan, by seeing the effulgent faces of devotees, by seeing devotees engaged in devotional service, by seeing devotees do kirtan, we become inspired. So that creates an environment which automatically extracts from our heart bhakti that's there, that in other environments it won't come out. But in other environments, what will come out? Lust. Yeah, we've all experienced it, isn't it? So in one environment, we're feeling lusty, we're feeling angry, we're feeling greedy, we're feeling passionate, we're feeling unsatisfied, we're feeling naughty, or feel, maybe feeling envious or jealous or just nasty. And in another environment, we may be feeling magnanimous, compassionate, kind. Like if you do something to give another person Krishna consciousness, it extracts a lot of bhakti from your heart. It extracts a lot of compassion from your heart. It is said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that when you give Krishna consciousness, you get it. So the act of giving increases your own Krishna consciousness. Without you having to do anything other than just giving, you get it. So that you can create that environment. When you're giving people Krishna consciousness, the more you're giving, the more you will find that deep down inside of you, there's all this compassion, there's all this caring for other people. You actually want to help other people. But in the mode of passion, you'll tend not to think about other people. You just tend to think about me. Let's go shopping. Let's buy me stuff. I need stuff. Stuff makes me happy. I don't have enough stuff. I only have 3 closets full of stuff. I could get more stuff because I just got a raise and I have a lot of money. So let me buy more stuff. There's new stuff out there all the time, right? When you're giving Krishna consciousness to other people, you don't think about me, 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 want, 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 I need, need, need. You think about how I can help this person. So it creates a different environment. So Prabhupada also pushed us so much. Give Krishna to others. Give Krishna to others. You could see that everything that Prabhupada did for us was to insulate us from Maya. So pushed us strong. Give Krishna consciousness. Just go for it. Give it to people. Strain your brain. Somehow or other, give people Krishna consciousness. Because he knew that's how we would be Krishna conscious. At the same time, he said, maintain very strictly 16 rounds, 4 regulative principles. So he kept both of these things going on, pushing these things. Do this regularly, daily. And that will create an environment which will automatically uplift and inspire you. Now, I was just reading this morning about Srila Prabhupada's travels around 1976 in Australia. And when he was there, he saw that the deities were very beautifully dressed. He saw that the devotees were very enthusiastically chanting and dancing. And then he said, and I can see that everything is going on nicely just by seeing how beautiful the deities are and how enthusiastic and happy the devotees are. That's the nature of the spiritual energy. Have you noticed the nature of the material energy? How does the material energy make you feel? Kind of makes you feel like, oh, another day. But when you go to a temple, especially during a kirtan, how does everybody feel during kirtan? We use the word ecstatic. Prabhu, that was ecstatic. Ecstatic kirtan. Prabhupada said even a newcomer can feel ecstasy during a kirtan because that's the nature of the spiritual energy. So Prabhupada said, if you're always happy, that means you're Krishna conscious. If you're not happy, you're not Krishna conscious, because that's the nature of material energy. You're not going to be happy. It's going to depress you. It's going to frustrate you. It's designed that way. You can't get around it. You can forget, you can ignore it, but it's there. You can make believe everything is okay. You can be very optimistic. But that's really just an illusion, because happiness doesn't exist there. All that exists there is some temporary relief, some illusion, some padding over of the pain. But Krishna consciousness is the platform of bliss. That's its nature. Anandamaya Vyasa, that's the nature of spiritual life. So we want to stay within that Anandamaya Vyasa. We want to stay in that spiritual energy. If we're in that energy, automatically everything just works perfectly. It just goes. If we surround ourselves with that. So, the moral of the story of this discussion is, we go back to the idea that every morning we could actually go to Goloka. We could go to Braj and we could be with Krishna every morning. You can get so absorbed in hearing and chanting and worshiping Krishna every morning that it's just as if you are there with him. Not it's just as if, it is. We just have to realize it. That we're there with him every morning. And then, just imagine what your days will be like. Every morning. You imagine, every morning Krishna came and said, okay, let's go to Braj, and he pulls you. And you go out herding the cows, or you go rasa dancing. Or you go taking care of Krishna and watch him steal butter and complain to Yasoda. And you went through these leelas every day for 2 or 3 or 4 hours with Krishna. And then you came back and went to work. How would you feel? What would your life be like? What would this world be? Think you'd be working hard. I have to get ahead. I have to get more. I need more. Let's get ahead. Let's build 2 houses. Let's get 3 cars. You wouldn't be thinking like that. You'd just be thinking, I can't wait to go back and be with Krishna, because that's where it's at. And everything in this world would just be so unattractive to you. It's like if you're away from home and let's say you're working and you're away from home and the work is really difficult and is really distasteful to you, and you just can't wait to get back home, and you're always thinking about being at home, and you just want to get out of there, of that work environment. There's nothing in that environment that's attractive to you. What's attractive to you is you just want to get back home. So if you were with Krishna every morning, that's what you'd feel like. You'd be at work, you'd be around in the world, and just go, no, there's nothing here that's attractive to me. I want to be there with Krishna. That's where. I just want to get back, get out of this job, get it over with today, or whatever it is I have to do, and get back and be with Krishna. That's what we want to come to. So the regulation of sadhana means that every day we can go there. Every day. And then we become attached to it. And we want to go there every day. Whereas in a neophyte condition, we can easily be pulled by our conditioned nature to be irregular in our practices of bhakti. And then the more we're irregular, as I said, the more the modes of nature influence us. And then the more they influence us, the more difficult it is to become regular in our Krishna consciousness. Kind of modes of nature undermine it. Because then our mind is just reeling and rolling. We want to do so many things and accomplish so many things in this world and be so many things and have so many things. And all of a sudden, what happens? Oh, I don't have any time for Krishna. I'm so busy. Why should we be so busy that we don't have any time for Krishna? It doesn't make sense. It's madness. I was listening to a funny lecture by Gaur Govinda Maharaj, and he was talking about the mind. And he kept saying, stupid mind. Stupid mind. Don't listen. Mind is stupid. Don't listen to it. It's just stupid. Just like if somebody's stupid, you know, they say things, and you just think, this person's stupid. And you don't listen to them. They don't know what they are. Somebody always wants to talk like they know something, but they don't know anything, and you just don't listen to them. You just get in trouble if you listen to them. So he's talking about the mind. Mind. Stupid mind. Why are you listening? The mind's saying so many things. Just go, stupid mind, be quiet. Stupid mind, be quiet. That's material energy, just the mind blabbing, babbling, talking. So many stupid things to take us away from Krishna. It's all stupid. Anything is stupid that takes us away from Krishna. That's material nature's job. So if we understand the disease, we understand the nature of the disease, that at any moment we can be drowned in the material ocean, drowned under the modes of nature, how powerful they are. How insurmountable Maya is. And we understand how serious that disease is, then we want to always situate ourselves above those modes. Be Krishna conscious. Don't allow yourself to delve in those modes, because once you do, then the ropes just pull you. And then you just, The Christians say, the devil made me do it. I couldn't control myself. He grabbed me. Pulled me here. Pulled me there. I have no choice. There's some truth to that, Krishna says, helplessly, forced to act helplessly. So what is that forced to act helplessly? That means we've allowed ourselves to go so deeply into the modes of nature that at that point we're just being pulled. We've become so weak, we're just being pulled. So the whole point of this talk is we don't want to get to that position. That's a dangerous position. You don't want to become sick with the flu. You want to be prevented. You want to prevent it. So, having said that, I'm going to look and see if any of you have any questions or comments. So, our true and loyal friend Carol, the one with all the questions and comments, we've been missing her. I haven't seen her in the last few weeks. Carol, where are you? Come back. You have all the questions. So, we have Scott, and I haven't seen Scott in ages. And Catherine. I don't even remember Catherine coming before, and Dan, who we can call Don, because Don means wealth, and Sneha, and of course Uti. So if you have any questions now, you can ask them before we continue. And I think the good thought for us is, as we've been talking in past shows about the power of association, there's also the power of association with the modes of nature. Just as there is the power of association with people, with devotees or non-devotees, there's the power of association with the modes of nature. And so the whole trick in Krishna consciousness is not to associate with that mode. And if you associate with goodness, if you associate with the internal potency, just that's all you have to do. You just associate with that, and then it does everything. That's the whole trick. It's like there's not so much we have to do. Just like you can see when you chant, if you chant well, that's all you have to do, because what's happening is the internal energy is doing everything else. Like devotees will say, when they're chanting, they get so many realizations. Very, very deep realization. But all they're doing is just chanting. And all the realizations are coming. Or the devotees will say, when I chant well, I become very inspired in Krishna consciousness. But they're not per se trying to inspire themselves. They're just trying to chant well. But as a result, they become inspired. So all we're really doing is putting ourselves under the influence of that internal energy. And then the internal energy does everything. It's kind of like if you eat well. Like if you eat a lot of green vegetables, you're going to be healthy. If you eat a lot of white flour, a lot of sugar, a lot of fried foods, a lot of ice cream and pizza, you're going to be very... By this time of night, you'll be really tired if you eat like that. But if you eat a lot of green vegetables, you're full of energy and vital. And if you exercise, you'll feel great and energized. So you just perform an activity, and the activity has a consequence. And so you're not consciously distributing the vitamins and getting the cellular energy and getting the oxygen and doing all this. You're just doing the activity. Or you're not gluing your brain up and gluing your arteries up per se. You're just eating the ice cream and the pizza and the white flour and the this and the that. And it's doing it for you. So it's actually very simple. We don't have to do so many things. Just by chanting properly and hearing, so much happens that we couldn't even do on our own. If we tried to do it, it wouldn't even happen. We wouldn't know how to do it. We wouldn't know where to start. Or we just do it. We do the activity of bhakti, and then the result comes. Like oftentimes I'm seeing devotees trying to overcome a habit or become more disciplined or self-controlled. And just by improving the quality of their chanting or increasing their prayers or increasing the time they spend reading or adding some devotion, more devotional activities to their life, the problem goes away, or they get the strength to overcome a bad habit, they get the strength to become more self-disciplined. So it comes along with it. It's part of that energy, that internal potency. It's uplifting. Whereas we were saying before, the material energy is the throwing and the covering. So if it's the throwing and the covering, then the spiritual energy is the uncovering and the opening. And the uplifting. Instead of throwing down, you're being thrown up. That's very, very easy. And one thing I've seen is it doesn't take a long time. Even someone very young in Krishna consciousness, you notice this, you'll see sometimes a devotee is very young, but they're very enthusiastic, they're very serious, and apparently very transcendental. But they're very young devotees. So why is that? Because they're seriously engaged in the process which is enabling them to transcend the influence of the modes of nature. Now, sounds... You might say, hey, that sounds too easy. You just transcend. No. So here's the example. Example is the boat. The boat is in the ocean, and the ocean is rough. So the boat is roughly gliding on the sea. The waves are crashing into it. That is compared to executing Krishna consciousness in the conditioned stage. where the modes of nature are pounding on us. But because we're in the boat of the practices of bhakti, even though it's rocking, the boat is still gliding. The boat is not sinking. The boat is not being diverted from its path. So yes, modes may pound on us a little bit, but they won't stop us. Just like Prabhupada told the story I told before, Arjuna, his son, was killed in the Battle of Kurukshetra. And he was seriously hurt by this, and he was lamenting. And a man asked Prabhupada, if Arjuna is a pure devotee, he shouldn't be lamenting for the loss of his son. And Prabhupada said, it's natural to lament the loss of one's son. But Arjuna did not stop fighting. So he was not overcome by lamentation. So you see that when you're in Krishna consciousness, okay, things may come and hit you, and you may be somewhat affected, but you don't stop. You're not affected enough to just give up. You continue in Krishna consciousness. So you're on the boat and it's moving. That's the power of the practice. That's like a fighter, you know. They're being hit in the face and the stomach. So a good fighter, he can tolerate it, maintain his equilibrium, maintain his concentration, maintain his strength, and fight back. So Maya's trying to hit us, but because we're practicing devotional service strictly, we're in good enough shape that we can take the hits, but we won't be knocked down. So that's the idea. So Sneha has a question. Sneha says, how does one become aware of the mode of nature that one is in? Well, I would recommend reading in Bhagavad Gita. You can read about the symptoms, the influences of modes of nature. But generally, if you're feeling restless, if you're feeling dissatisfied, if you're not feeling very enlivened in Krishna consciousness, if you're feeling in any way depressed, unhappy, confused, very distracted, or very, what's the word, when your mind is in many places at once, if you're feeling that you need something you don't have and then you'll be happy, you're feeling envious of someone, or you're feeling a strong desire for recognition. These are symptoms of the modes of nature. If you understand the symptoms of a Krishna conscious person, then you're going to understand the symptoms of the modes of nature. A Krishna conscious person is blissful, is always blissful, is always satisfied, is always the well-wisher of others, he's not envious. He's always enlivened, inspired, energetic, compassionate. So these are the qualities of a Krishna conscious person. So if we're not feeling that, at least to some degree, but particularly feeling the opposite of that, that would be indication that the modes of nature are there. And I think one of the best ways to understand how the modes work are to get out of them. To be really Krishna conscious. Let's say this week, just try to be really Krishna conscious. Just chant some really good rounds, study every day, get up early, really insulate yourself. And then you can feel yourself gliding a bit above the modes of nature. And then as the day goes by, you might feel yourself kind of gliding back into them. And it'll be very clear what's going on. So get out of the modes and you'll know what it's like when you're in them, when you fall back in the modes. When you're always in the modes, you can't really tell. If you can get away for that 1, 2, 3 hours every morning and be with Krishna, then you'll understand what it's like to be beyond the modes of nature. Definitely. And then when you're not there, you'll understand how the modes influence you. I mean, one of the ways the modes influence us, one of the powerful ways, is to put ourselves in the center. In Krishna consciousness, we put Krishna in the center. Everything's for Krishna. And I'm a servant. In material consciousness, everything for me. So I'm thinking of this world with me in the center. Everything's evolving around me. My life, my happiness, my needs, my pleasures, my anxiety. How do I resolve my anxieties? Where Krishna consciousness means Krishna's happiness, Krishna's pleasure. Relieve Krishna's anxiety. Relieve the anxiety of the conditioned souls. So whenever the modes of nature influence us, we tend to take Krishna out of the center and put ourselves there. We tend to, as Prabhupada said, we want to enjoy separately from Krishna. That's how the modes of nature influence us. Be separate. You know, Krishna, you know, Krishna's okay. You know, I mean, I go to the Sunday feast and like that. But most of the time I put him outside of the circle of my life and just kind of keep him there, you know, looking things over. And if anything goes wrong, and then I can pray to him and say, please help me. But normally I go about my business and do what I like and have a good time. That's material life. That's the influence of Maya, the modes of nature. So when you're out of those modes, then you're thinking about Krishna's pleasure. You're not self-absorbed. You're self-realized, which means to realize you're a servant of Krishna. Okay. But read Bhagavad Gita about the modes of nature. You'll find the 13th chapter, 14th chapter, all the way, the last chapter is also 18th chapter. Krishna describes faith in the mode, the different modes, religion in the different modes, knowledge in the different modes, food in the different modes, action in the different modes. And you can see. You can see where you're at, or just, it'll become more apparent to you the more you practice Krishna consciousness. You'll feel it coming, the modes coming. Okay, so anyone else have any other questions before we go? If you have no more questions, then we're going to end early tonight. So, of course, it's hard for me to end early because I like to talk so much, but I think I've made my point clear. Prabhupada, you know, very often spoke of the modes of nature as infections. So it's a very good analogy that I'm being infected by passion. Being infected by ignorance, and you can feel it. If you ever feel really lazy or really scatterbrained or really fearful, if you ever feel revenge, anger, that's passion, ignorance. Okay, so Scott has a question. Scott says, I am in the wilderness a lot alone. I chant my rounds and surrender before sunrise. And, okay, I always want to be in the wilderness. Is that, he's going to say, is that okay? I think that's what he's going to say. So, I always wanted to be in the wilderness. Is that attachment to material nature? Or is that a material attachment? Well, we can use material attachments in Krishna's service. It could be a material attachment. It could just be your nature. And because it's your nature, naturally you like it and you're attached to it. But I think if something is our nature, that we're meant to live in a certain way, it's a little different than just straight material attachment. But I would say, we said, I don't know if you were here a few shows before, we said, and Sneha, I will get to your question, we said, not that we said, but we quoted Shastra and said that the root cause of devotional service is association with the sadhus. Of course, now you're associating with sadhus in the virtual world, so that's very good. So, as we advance in Krishna consciousness, we become more aware of what is conducive to bhakti. And sometimes, you are the one who's going to know in your life what is conducive. Because sometimes, if we live just by the textbook may say this is conducive and this is not conducive. That may not always be the case entirely. So I think the best answer to your question is your own honesty. If you can stand back from your attachment to being alone and not being with people and just ask yourself, is this the best thing for me? It may be the best thing. Maybe your interactions with people are not inspiring to you or not helping you. Or maybe your interactions are better when you're alone a lot. But you have to be honest. with yourself. And honesty can only come when we're detached from what the answer is. Because the answer might be something we don't want to hear or we don't want to do. We don't want to hear it because we don't want to do it. So I just recommend every devotee to be as honest with themselves as possible. And if they're still confused, of course, there's Shastra, there's Sadhu, there's Guru, the instructions are there. But sometimes there are nuances within those instructions. And what may appear to be right, we may be doing in a wrong way. Or what may appear to be wrong, it may not be wrong always. Now, I don't know if you remember, I told the story of a devotee who was chanting 64 rounds a day. And at one point, Prabhupada said that actually he was doing this, it was actually sense gratification for him. I think what Prabhupada meant, it was really, he was avoiding devotees, he was avoiding responsibility, he was avoiding service. And so the chanting was just, it was kind of, it almost became what Prabhupada saw as something material. Just, you know, for his own pleasure, his own happiness, I just want to go off and chant. So the idea is that whatever we do, we want it to be an inspiration to do service. So if being alone in the forest a lot is an inspiration to you in Krishna consciousness, so that when you're with people in the world, you're inspired to do service, then certainly that can be beneficial. But you have to see ultimately how it's helping or how it may be hindering. Or you may ask somebody if they think it's helping or hindering. So I don't know the details of your situation, how often you're with devotees and so forth. But you say, but I live far from a temple, but I'm happiest in the temple. Yeah, so that sounds good. And I would recommend any time you can go to a temple, particularly if you can get some time to stay in the temple, a week or so. This is very, very important. For those of you who live far from temples, very, very important you get to temples, you get association with devotees. Excuse me. You get association with devotees on a regular basis. Very, very important. Association is really everything. Any problem you have, any obstacle you have, in the association of devotees, that's where you're going to overcome it. So it's so important. Or start a temple in your home and invite people and make devotees. Then you'll be surrounded by devotees, all the ones you made. Okay. So Sneha says, has one to be in one of the three modes of nature at all times? Yes. Unless you're perfectly Krishna conscious and you've transcended the modes of nature, which in our conditioned state we have not, although we can enter into Krishna consciousness in a transcendental state if we're fully absorbed in our chanting, or fully absorbed in hearing, or fully absorbed in serving Krishna. But that also borders within the mode of goodness. Material activities are usually influenced by a combination of the three modes of nature, and in Kali Yuga, particularly by ignorance and passion. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, it's usually a combination, and one tends to predominate. Until one transcends the modes of nature, there'll always be this combination working on us. But Krishna consciousness, sagunan samatitaitan, you transcend the modes of nature, brahma bhuyaya kalpate, and you come to Brahman. That's the practice. Through devotional service, transcend. Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya daratyaya. This maya of mine, very difficult, daratyaya, to overcome. Mam eva ye prapadyante, but those who surrender, mayam etam tarantite, easily cross beyond it. So what is basically or virtually impossible becomes possible when we surrender to Krishna. Otherwise, Prabhupada said, a man asked Prabhupada, he asked him about surrender. I forget the question. I forget the details of the question, but the question was about surrender. And Prabhupada said, you are always surrendered. He said, just like in this world, you are surrendered to the government. You follow them. You follow the laws. Or if you don't, you'll surrender to the police department. But in either case, you're surrendered. And the police will take you to jail if you don't follow their laws. So that's the idea. Surrender. So either we're going to be influenced by the modes of nature, we're going to surrender to the modes, we're going to surrender to Maya, or we're going to surrender to Krishna and be influenced transcendentally, or at least by goodness. As you become more aware, as your understanding of the modes of nature increases, you will become more aware of how they are influencing you. You definitely will notice it. And if you chant your rounds very nicely, if you improve your chanting, you will notice, you will feel the influence of material nature subsiding. It's just like if you have a headache, you can feel it subsiding. Or if you're tired and you feel the fatigue subsiding, you'll feel the modes subsiding on you. Okay, so if no one has any more questions, then we will end class here. And you can experiment this week with creating an environment that's uplifting, doing things in your life and creating environments within your life that will naturally uplift you. And then you will see, as Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness becomes very easy. It's not difficult. It's difficult when we don't do those things. And then we're trying to battle with those things. And we can't. You can't fight Maya head on. Krishna fights Maya for you. That's the idea. Okay, you're welcome. Also, Scott has another question. Okay, Scott, we have 4 minutes. Scott's going to ask my opinion. And in answering your question, I'll let you know if it's my opinion, or I'll let you know if it's Siddhanta, or I'll let you know if different devotees or acharyas have different opinions. Okay, Scott says, last year, it's coming out in segments here. He's keeping us in suspension, okay? Not suspension. He's keeping us in, what's he keeping us in? Suspense. Last year, a ball of energy appeared in front of my face. It was energetic. And I checked what did you check an hour later, and I got a phone. Everything's coming out in can you write it all out at once? I got a phone call saying my father had died. So he's going to write the rest out at once. Is that the whole thing? So my opinion on what that ball of energy was? This definitely would be my opinion. The time of death certificate was the exact same time I saw the ball. Oh, what does that mean? It means I can honestly say I can't. Did I see the soul? Some connection is there with you and your father, obviously, energetically. Was it the soul? I don't know. That we can't say, but very close relationship. Perhaps you and your father were very close for many lifetimes and such a deep connection that you were connected, or maybe he came to see you, say goodbye. I mean, are you and your father very close? He said yes, so that's probably why. I was in Mayapur, and a devotee told me that I'll tell you the story, it might help you. He was having a terrible time with his wife. I forget the details. But I think his wife had gone off with another man. And they got a divorce, and his son stayed with him. And his son did not want to stay with his mother, which is very unusual. Usually, the boy was 10 or something. Usually a 10-year-old boy would want to stay with his mother. And so this devotee said, well, we had our astrology done. He said, my son and I are very close. And he said, the astrologer said, in your last life, you were like best friends. So maybe you and your father had some connection. And of course, if you're practicing Krishna consciousness, that's the best service you can do for him is to become Krishna conscious. It's such a nice thing, devotional service, because we can serve our families in the best way by becoming purified. So many generations past and future become purified, liberated, Shastra says. 27 generations, 21 generations, different statements are there. So, sounds like some connection was there. Yes, gave him Mahaprasad, offer him. Yeah, that's nice. On the anniversary of his death, you could offer feasts to the devotees in his honor. That's nice. Nice way to serve. Okay. So thank you for that question. Thank you everyone for attending. We'll continue talking about sadhana next week. And hopefully your sadhana practices will become a little more disciplined, self-controlled, more regular. Hopefully you can increase them. And hopefully you'll insulate yourself more and more. All right. Well, thank you everyone. And we'll see you next week. Hare Krishna.